Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today on our Capitol Report, we bring you a very important national story. Our democracy is at risk. And if you don't believe that, take a listen to some excerpts from the Supreme Court hearing on immunity claims, where Donald Trump's attorneys argued that he should have dictatorial powers. Then on Jobs Talk, we'll have some great news for you about an incubator business center just launched in El Cajon, thanks to a major financial commitment from the county and from the city of El Cajon to help new refugees and immigrants get training to start new businesses here in East County. If you enjoy walnuts, listen up. There is a recall due to E. coli contamination on organic walnuts sold in California and other states. The county and the federal government are teaming up to open a new migrant transit center to help prevent migrants from being released onto the streets of San Diego and help them reunite with families or get to their final destinations in the U.S. The El Cajon City Council is debating whether or not to ask taxpayers to extend a temporary sales tax increase that's slated to sunset soon. There's some good news for Ramona residents seeking rides. A new Ramona shuttle service is coming to the community. We'll also tell you about Grossmont Hospital's new Walk with a Doc program, and a pilot rescued thanks to the heroic actions of neighbors in El Cajon after a plane crash there. From California News Service, we'll have a troubling story about election workers stepping down, and a story on the Biden administration's efforts to declassify marijuana as a Schedule I drug. We'll have the latest on rabbit deaths across East County and what may be causing those. Then on 2024 Talks from Public News Service, President Biden speaks out on Gaza protests on campuses that have turned violent in some places. From California News Service, we'll have an update on some of those protests right here in our state. And then on Destination East County, we'll tell you about all the most fun festivals and events coming up across East County in the merry month of May, including some Mother's Day happenings and more. Now, if you're looking to save money on egg bills, we'll have some tips for you today on how to raise chickens in your backyard. And then on Tribal Meat, learn about a major expansion of Hummel tribal lands, approved by the House of Representatives. We'll also have some barbecue safety tips for you as Memorial Day weekend approaches. And we'll be re-airing our interview with Juliana Giugis, the new leader of the Chaldean Community Council. And finally, we'll have some news from the county and the state on CalFresh Awareness Month and some events coming up to help those who may qualify for CalFresh food benefits. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. In recent arguments before the U.S. Supreme Court, former President Donald Trump's lawyers argue that presidents should be immune from prosecution for any official acts done while they are in office, unless the president is impeached and convicted by Congress. But Trump attorney David Sauer's argument, if accepted by the High Court, would grant a president virtually dictatorial powers. Liberal justices pushed back on that disturbing proposition. Justice Elena Kagan pressed Sauer on whether ordering a military coup or selling nuclear secrets to a foreign power would be considered official acts that would prevent criminal prosecution of a president. And Sauer said such acts should be protected by presidential immunity. Justice Sonia Sotomayor grilled Sauer on whether ordering execution of a political rival would be considered an official act or one for personal gain. Here's what that exchange sounded like.
If the president decides that his rival is a corrupt person and he orders the military or orders someone to assassinate him, is that within his official acts that for which he can get immunity?
It would depend on the hypothetical, but we can see that could well be an official act.
It could, and why? Because he's doing it for personal reasons. He's not doing it at, like President Obama is alleged to have done it, to protect the country from a terrorist. He's doing it for personal gain. And isn't that the nature of the allegations here? That he's not doing them, doing these acts in furtherance of an official responsibility. He's doing it for personal gain.
I agree with that characterization of the indictment, and that confirms immunity, because the characterization is that there's a series of official acts that were done for an unlawful purpose.
No, because immunity says even if you did it for personal gain, we won't hold you responsible. How could that be?
That's an extremely strong doctrine in this court's case law in cases like Fitzgerald.
Well, we go back to Justice Thomas's question, which was, where does that come from? There are amici here who tell us that the founders actually talked about whether to grant immunity to the president. And in fact, they had state constitutions that granted some criminal immunity to governors. And yet, they didn't take it up. Instead, they pass an impeachment clause that basically says you can't remove the president from office except by a trial in the Senate, but you can impeach him after. So, or you can impose criminal liability. We would be creating a situation in which we would be saying, this is what you're asking us to say, which is that a president is entitled not to make a mistake, but more than that, a president is entitled for total personal gain to use the trappings of his office. That's what you're trying to get us to hold, without facing criminal liability.
Now, ironically, while Trump's lawyer argued to the justices that only impeachment could hold a president accountable for official acts, Trump's legal team previously argued during his impeachment trial in January 2020 that only a charged crime could be grounds for impeachment. So the logic is circular, leaving no room to ever hold a president accountable. The case before the High Court will determine whether or not the Justice Department can prosecute Trump for official acts in a pending case accusing the former president and current Republican presidential nominee of election interference and for his role in inciting the violent attack on the U.S. Capitol by insurrectionists. But the conservative majority on the Supreme Court seemed to be leaning toward remanding the case back to a lower appeals court to determine just what is or isn't an official act. Trump's attorneys have argued, for example, that his role in a conspiracy to appoint fake electors was an official act, even though it benefited his campaign. Supreme Court Justice John Roberts said, "What concerns me is the Court of Appeals did not get into focused consideration about what acts we're talking about." If the Supreme Court does send the case back to a lower court, or simply stalls on a ruling for a significant period of time, any such delay could prevent the Department of Justice case against Trump from heading to trial before the November election. And, should Trump win, he has vowed to weaponize the Department of Justice to go after his enemies and likely try to pardon himself along with accused co-conspirators. Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy.
Opening an incubator business center to help refugees and immigrants start new businesses has been a dream of Dr. Nori Barka for more than a decade. On April 11th, that dream came to fruition at a ceremony launching the Chaldean Community Council's new incubator business center in El Cajon. The center will provide help for low-income and underserved refugee community members to launch new businesses. Supervisor Joel Anderson called the occasion a joyous day as he presented a check for $500,000 from the county to the Chaldean Community Council to kickstart the Incubator Business Center. He also issued a proclamation declaring April 11th El Cajon Small Business Incubator Day. Funding was provided through the Federal American Rescue Plan Act, the Small Business Stimulus Grant Program, and the county's Community Enhancement Program. Supervisor Anderson stated, "For years, I've said we need an incubator to kickstart businesses. In East County, we've got entrepreneurial spirit to be tapped." He predicts that the investment will produce new entrepreneurs, bringing wealth and opportunities to East County. He praised El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells after the city agreed to lease office space for the Incubator Business Center for just $1 a year over the next 5 years. Mayor Wells said, "I'm thankful that the Chaldean community has chosen El Cajon to come and live. They are fantastic neighbors." The mayor said it was a no-brainer for the city to help out after Dr. Barca proposed his idea to help new immigrants learn how to launch their own businesses, noting that El Cajon has the largest group of refugees west of the Mississippi. Dr. Barca, president of Cal Biotech and a leader in the Iraqi Chaldean community, first announced his vision for an incubator business center back in 2014 in an interview with East County Magazine. He explained that entrepreneurs who want to start a business would be given space, tools, expertise, and investors for several years. After graduating, they could receive continuing support, provided that they launch new businesses in East County. Barca hopes to create good-paying jobs in the biotech industry and other fields. In that 2014 interview, he told East County Magazine, "Many of these newcomers are established business people. They are doctors, engineers. They will be pioneers in helping our economy at the end of the day," he predicted. At the April 11th event, Dr. Barca recalled the first Chaldean festival in 2010 and thanked the city for its ongoing support at a time when many had come to the U.S. after fleeing war in Iraq. He added, "You fed us, you cared for us, and now we're giving back." He noted that Chaldeans now own over 3,500 businesses locally. As for the Incubator Business Center, he says, "Our mission is to help the newcomers. Many reach this country with talent, but they don't know how to start." Dr. Barca emphasized that the Incubator Business Center is not only for Chaldeans, but for everyone. Plans for the Incubator Business Center include taking in up to 20 businesses, providing them space, and mentoring to launch their companies. Barca says there are already several candidates, including an Afghan woman who wants to start a fashion business, something that would not have been possible in her homeland under the Taliban's rule. Kay Turpin with the Chaldean Community Council calls Barca the saint of El Cajon. Bishop Emmanuel Shaleta from St. Peter's Chaldean Catholic Diocese was also on hand to offer a blessing at the new facility. San Diego County Assessor Recorder Clerk Jordan Marks says the county's $500,000 contribution is probably the largest check I've seen come to East County. As Supervisor Anderson presented the check to the Chaldean Community Council, Marks concluded, "You have seeded the American dream here today." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Danae Ramirez.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. A dozen people have become ill with E. coli infections linked to Gibson Farms organic walnut halves and pieces, including 7 people who were hospitalized. The walnuts, which have been recalled, were sold mainly in bulk bins at natural food stores and co-ops, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, though some of the walnuts may have been packaged. The walnuts were distributed in many states, but the illnesses to date occurred in California and Washington. Consumers are advised to discard the recalled walnuts or return them to the store. Now, if you're not sure if the walnuts were recalled, do not eat them. Wash surfaces that may have touched walnuts using hot soapy water or a dishwasher. The Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, has a list of stores that may have received these walnuts, including lot number and expiration dates. Most people develop symptoms of E. coli within 3 or 4 days after exposure. Call your health provider if you have severe stomach cramps, severe diarrhea, and a fever higher than 102 degrees, excessive vomiting, dehydration, or dizziness, all signs of E. coli.
The federal government has approved $19.6 million for a long-term migrant and asylum seeker transit center in San Diego County. The action comes after a migrant center in San Diego shut down in February after running out of money and after county supervisors asked the Biden administration for help. Supervisors approved $6 million last year, $3 million each in October and December, to open the migrant center and keep it running. But it wasn't enough, prompting Chair Nora Vargas to propose a sustainable and federally funded center. On April 30th, supervisors voted 4-1 to advance a proposal to use money from the county's general fund reserves to temporarily aid migrants while awaiting arrival of the federal money. That aid will include shelter, food, transportation, hygiene supplies, and acute medical care for migrants released from custody by the Department of Homeland Security. Interim Chief
Administrator
Sarah Agassi will formally request the funding at supervisors' meeting on May 21st. She is also applying for grant funds to assist migrants. Supervisor Joel Anderson, whose district includes East County, where thousands of migrants are regularly crossing the border in Hakumba says our region has had over 135,000 migrants released onto the streets since last September. The migrant center had processed over 80,000 people, with nearly all 99% moving onto locations outside of San Diego County until the migrant center shut down in February. Anderson says the new plan isn't perfect, but he called it a step in the right direction to make sure the migrants don't wind up homeless or exploited, such as through human trafficking. Chair Vargas thanked her colleagues for support, adding, "Together, we are working to tackle the global humanitarian crisis at our border by expediting the asylum process, reducing street releases, and ensuring that asylum seekers are treated with the utmost dignity as they seek safety and a brighter future." Supervisors Monica Montgomery Stepp and Tara Lawson Remmer are supportive of the long-term shelter plan, but Supervisor Jim Desmond is opposed. He wants to see federal dollars used instead to beef up security at the border, screen migrants entering the U.S., and increase efforts to stop boats offshore from smuggling migrants into the U.S. During public comments, several nonprofit spokespersons proposed ideas to help migrants and asked the county for an open bidding process to operate the migrant center, with full transparency over how funds are expended. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
El Cajon's half-cent sales tax increase has been in place since voters approved Proposition J back in 2008. It generates $14 million, or about 13% of the city's revenue stream, and has been helped fund local police and fire departments. But it will sunset or end in 2028 unless a new ballot measure is approved to extend it. So, alternatives are being considered by the City Council to either cut expenses or raise revenues through other sources to maintain essential services. According to City Manager Graham Mitchell, a poll commissioned by the city found an overall positive reaction from the community for continuing the current sales tax after 2028. 110 people were interviewed via various means, ranging from emails to text messages. The survey found that most said they would prefer the half-cent sales tax instead of some alternatives that are proposed. Those alternatives include a freeze on new fire department staffing, an increase in some city fees, legalizing cannabis sales to bring in more sales tax money, and even converting one of the public parks to low-income housing to boost property tax revenues. The City Council may weigh in at a future meeting on whether or not to put a ballot initiative on the ballot asking citizens to renew the half-cent sales tax before Proposition J expires. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
Ramona residents who need a ride to shop for groceries, visit a doctor, or even a cultural event will soon have a shuttle service. A $10 million grant to the Ramona Community Center / Ramona Senior Center has been approved to cover the first 4 years of the shuttle, which is expected to feature electric-powered vans and a new shuttle garage, meeting space, and solar panels at the center, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. The grant is from the California Strategic Growth Council. The grant partners include the Ramona Water District, along with the Ramona Senior Center, the Ramona Junior Fair, and FACT, or Facilitating Access to Transportation, the shuttle provider. Rose LaRosa came up with the idea for a shuttle after moving to Ramona from Cleveland, which had more accessible transit. Her vision was to bring transportation to seniors, the disabled, and disadvantaged communities. Organizers hope the shuttle service will be up and running by the end of this year. Once infrastructure is installed, including charging stations, long range, they hope to extend the shuttle service to serve hikers and visitors at Mount Woodson who want to visit Ramona for shopping or dining. Reporting from Ramona, this is Miriam Raftery on East County Magazine.
In alignment with its commitment to inspire communities through movement and conversation, Sharp Grossmont Hospital has launched its new community engagement initiative called Walk with a Doc. This innovative nationwide program is being led locally by Sharp-affiliated physicians Dr. Kaveh Bagheri and Dr. Ara Klijan. Scheduled for the fourth Thursday each month, Walk with a Doc aims to foster a stronger connection between the community and healthcare professionals. Every session starts with a brief educational talk focusing on vital health topics such as diet, lung and heart health, and the benefits of regular physical activity. And then, participants walk with doctors and other hospital staff at Briarcrest Park in La Mesa to continue the conversation. Dr. Begary says this program gives me the opportunity to speak with community members and answer some of their basic health questions. Today I spoke with participants about their primary care, what their medical condition is, and answered some of the questions that they had in a much more relaxed environment rather than a doctor's office, he said during the first session. By integrating practical health guidance with physical activity, Walk with a Doc seeks to strengthen patient-physician relationships while providing a unique opportunity for the public to take tangible steps toward better health in real time. For details on how you can participate in upcoming Walk with a Doc events, you can visit sharp.com/classes or just call the Sharp Community Resource Center at 619-740-4214. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine on KNSJ.
When a small plane made an emergency crash landing in an El Cajon neighborhood on April 28th, neighbors rushed to douse the plane with a fire extinguisher and rescued the pilot from the wreckage. He was taken to a hospital with moderate injuries but was expected to fully recover. The single-engine Belenca Super Viking plane crashed onto a sidewalk near Lily Avenue and Clark Drive in El Cajon. The accident also knocked down power lines, causing an outage to about 1,000 customers, according to SDG&E. Fortunately, the pilot managed to avoid hitting homes, and no one else was injured. The plane was flying to Gillespie Field in El Cajon, according to Heartland Fire and Rescue. Sean McGurry, another pilot in the air nearby, told 10 News that he heard the troubled plane's pilot report a drop in oil pressure and a rise in oil temperature, a situation that would require an emergency landing. The El Cajon Police Department is coordinating with the Federal Aviation Administration to investigate the cause of the crash. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
A new report shows turnover among California chief election officials reached 57% in 2022, a record high. Then it declined this year to 40%. Researchers at UCLA partnered with the Bipartisan Policy Center to analyze the data from 18,000 jurisdictions nationwide. Rachel Ori with the Bipartisan Policy Center says election workers' jobs have gotten significantly harder in recent years.
Today, election officials must manage everything from cybersecurity risks posed by foreign adversaries to people who are doubting the outcome of elections to information technology, legal disputes, political pressures.
The turnover rate is defined as the percentage of jurisdictions in a state that have had their chief local election official change within the prior 4 years. It's been an issue in California for decades. The turnover rate stood at 41% back in 2004. But things got much worse after 2020 when election officials became targets of threats and harassment, often spurred by former President Donald Trump's evidence-free claims about a rigged election. Ori says she expects this year's presidential election to go smoothly because dozens of states, including California, have done a lot to beef up the elections workforce.
65% of local election officials have experience running a presidential election. Where there are new officials, we find that they have an average of 8 years of experience in an election office. So all in all, we see that election officials are well prepared to administer the 2024 presidential election.
The report recommends better funding for election offices, higher salaries, and more training in order to attract and retain a highly skilled election workforce. Support for this reporting was provided by Carnegie Foundation of New York. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. Marijuana legalization groups are celebrating after the Drug Enforcement Agency proposed Tuesday to reclassify cannabis as less dangerous or addictive than Schedule I drugs such as heroin or LSD. Marijuana would be downgraded to the same category as ketamine or some anabolic steroids. Dale Geringer with the nonprofit Cal Normal says his organization first sued the DEA more than 50 years ago to get cannabis reclassified to Schedule III.
This is hunt. Long overdue step forward for the federal government, but it does not actually change the legality of marijuana that people get at legal dispensaries in California or elsewhere.
Opponents cite concerns about the safety of long-term marijuana use. State laws legalizing recreational and medicinal marijuana are not affected. However, the new classification would clear the way for more federally funded research on marijuana and would benefit dispensaries by making them eligible for certain tax deductions. Geringer says he'd like Congress to legalize recreational marijuana nationwide.
What needs to happen is marijuana has to be formally descheduled, taken out of the Controlled Substances Act, and treated like alcohol or tobacco, actually, by its own separate laws.
The White House Office of Management and Budget is expected to review the proposed rule, which would then be released for public comment. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A cluster of rabbit deaths in the past week in the Hamul-Dulzura area has residents and wildlife officials concerned. The State Department of Fish and Wildlife is asking anybody who finds a dead or dying wild rabbit to immediately report it online at wildlife.ca.gov or call 916-358-2790. That website again is wildlife.ca.gov. A state wildlife official told East County Magazine that rabbit hemorrhagic disease virus 2, or HDV2, is a likely possible reason for the deaths, though tularemia, a tick-borne disease also known as rabbit fever, is another possibility. A third option suspected locally is a parasitic infection which can migrate to the brain of rabbits. Connie Kirkpatrick says she found a dead rabbit and another one near death in the Barrett Junction-Dulzura area with bellies that were riddled with ticks and no other apparent abnormalities. Others are reporting rabbit deaths on social media. She told us, everybody has been finding dead rabbits from Hamul all the way up to the mountain areas. But Kirkpatrick says when she called the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, she was at first provided procedures to just bury the carcasses, and nobody offered to pick them up for testing. Another state employee did later contact her asking to test the body, but it was too late. Deanna Clifford, a senior wildlife veterinarian with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, confirmed in a conversation with East County Magazine, we've had a significant uptick in reports, with roughly 11 dead rabbits reported in just the last few days here. While it's impossible to test every dead rabbit due to budget constraints, she says we pay attention especially to multiple rabbit mortality or an uptick, adding that right now they are very interested in getting carcasses to test, especially from the Dulzura and Hamul areas. Testing needs to ideally be done within 48 hours of death and no more than 72 hours. The rabbit must have an intact liver, so if it's been scavenged by predators such as hawks or coyotes, it can't be tested. Rabbit hemorrhagic disease was first found in San Diego County in June 2020 when a desert cottontail from Poway tested positive. This disease is fatal up to 90% of the time in European rabbits, but not enough data is available yet to confirm the mortality rates here in U.S. species. In 2021, 11 more cases were found locally, including black-tailed jackrabbits and desert cottontails, including cases in Santee, the Rancho Hamul Ecological Reserve, Borrego Springs, San Vicente Ecological Reserve in Lakeside, Alpine, Ramona, and Campo. No cases were found in 2022 or 2023 locally, although 10 rabbits were tested. This year so far, Fish and Wildlife has received 21 reports of dead rabbits, and they've tested 4 from across our county, but they were all negative. Though bleeding from the mouth is often a sign of this disease, along with convulsions, lethargy, and breathing trouble, some rabbit carcasses that test positive for the hemorrhagic disease do not show any signs of bleeding. To protect domestic rabbits from RHDV4, the California Department of Food and Agriculture urges owners to prevent contact with wild rabbits. Keep your domestic rabbits indoors, or if they are outdoors, off the ground. Avoid feeding hay grown or stored outside in areas where wild rabbits are affected, and use biosecurity measures to prevent the spread of the virus. The hemorrhagic disease is not transmissible to dogs, people, or other wildlife, though other animals may spread it. By contrast, Clifford says tularemia is absolutely capable of being a zoonotic disease, meaning it can spread to other species, including humans. The most common form of transmission for tularemia is through bites of fleas or ticks, though handling a rabbit or carcass with tularemia can also transmit the disease if the person's not wearing gloves or taking appropriate other precautions. Tularemia has been specifically found in the San Diego County, but only sporadically. As for parasitic disease, this was suspected in several rabbits being stored in a freezer for testing at Project Wildlife in Ramona, but unfortunately a freezer lost power and the carcasses degraded so they could not be tested.
Now, if you do find a dead rabbit, don't handle it without gloves on. Check the California Fish and Wildlife site for further instructions and be sure to report it. Clifford assures that the department is reaching out to its phone line operators in our region to be sure they have the latest guidance for advising callers in the future. She also asked us to remind the public that springtime is when baby rabbits, or kits, are commonly found, and sometimes they're mistakenly removed by well-intentioned people. If you do find a baby rabbit that's not injured in a location such as under a bush, it's best to leave it there and keep an eye on it, since mother rabbits often hide their young for many hours. She says we encourage people that might find an uninjured kit under a bush to not disturb the area and leave it where they found it. Mother rabbits often leave and hide their young for many hours and only nurse a few times a day, Clifford says. If an animal appears sick or injured, however, you can contact the Humane Society's Project Wildlife and find tips at sdhumane.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Massive protests and tent encampments opposing the war in Gaza are growing at universities across California, with classes canceled at UCLA on Wednesday after tensions boiled over into violence there. In addition, police arrested 25 students at Cal Poly Humboldt on Tuesday. An organizer named Rithik from the Students for Gaza encampment at San Francisco State University recently spoke to Sonali Kohatkar for her TV and radio show, Yes Presents, Rising Up with Sonali.
Students everywhere are appalled at the current genocide occurring in Gaza that is being perpetrated by Israel and backed by the United States. You know, we understand that our taxpayer money is not going towards our own education, but rather to fund this genocide and wars of aggression across the world.
At SFSU, students are demanding that the CSU system divest any holdings in companies that sell arms to Israel, that the student protesters not be sanctioned by the school, and that the university president should make a statement opposing Israeli occupation of Palestinian land and declare the war a genocide. Pro-Israel groups argue that the war is justified given the massacre perpetrated by Hamas that kicked off the violence. They also worry that Jewish students will feel intimidated on campus. However, a Jewish student named Jacob at San Francisco State says that is not his experience.
I don't think we've ever felt that any of the actions being taken in the name of anti-Zionism and anti-colonialism are anti-Semitic, never felt unsafe, never felt unwelcome in these spaces. You know, anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism.
SFSU President Lynn Mahoney has emphasized the university's support for peaceful protest and says the university has already taken steps to divest. This story was produced with original reporting from Sonali Kohatkar for the TV and radio show Yes Presents, Rising Up with Sonali. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Dissent is essential to democracy, but dissent must never lead to disorder or to denying the rights of others so students can finish the semester and their college education.
President Joe Biden says Americans have the right to protest, but not the right to cause chaos. In a televised address, Biden condemned the campus unrest over Gaza, but rejected Republican demands to send in the National Guard. He said the growing student protests haven't changed his posture toward the Israel-Hamas war. School administrators who've called in police to dismantle student encampments are facing faculty backlash. At UCLA, they're reportedly considering a work stoppage. Columbia University professor Rashid Khalid says his colleagues have called for a vote of no confidence in the school's president.
This is the conscience of a nation speaking through your kids, through young people who are risking their futures, who are risking suspension, expulsion, criminal arrest in order to wake people up in this country.
More than 2,000 people have been arrested on college campuses in the past 2 weeks. Former President Donald Trump is refusing to commit to accepting the results of the 2024 election. He tells the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel he'd accept a loss in Wisconsin, but only, as he puts it, if everything's honest. The Biden campaign said Trump's comments again confirm that he's a threat to democracy. Montana is the latest state to let parents pay private school tuition with public money, but advocates for students with disabilities are suing to stop that. Riley Summers Flanagan with Helena-based Upper Seven Law says to get the money, students must first renounce their right to a free quality education under the state constitution.
It appears just to be a gambit to try to privatize public money and to send it to vendors who have no accountability and no responsibility to genuinely meet the needs of kids with disabilities.
Meanwhile, Nebraska lawmakers have voted to circumvent a ballot measure aimed at repealing a school voucher program. Democratic State Senator Carol Blood calls it an act of cowardice to deny the will of the voters.
When we refuse to hear the voices of the 117,000 people who said, yes, we want to vote on this issue, who are we to decide that we know better than them?
Alabama lawmakers will let President Biden be on the November ballot. Last month, the Secretary of State warned Democrats their national convention, when Biden would be formally nominated, would miss the state's certification deadline. Democratic State Senator Marika Coleman praised the bipartisan fix.
If one of the nominees is not on the Alabama ballot, then that's a whole lot of people in the state of Alabama that are disenfranchised.
The Biden campaign faces the same issue in Ohio, where lawmakers have less than a week to make the adjustment. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
In the merry month of May, you'll find plenty of marvelous events coming up in East County, including a lilac festival in Julian, vintage alpine, Mother's Day teas, La Mesa's Art in the Park, a taste of Ramona, and wild in the country at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, among others. Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures invite you to their 9th annual Lilac Festival on Saturdays and Sundays through Mother's Day weekend from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Fort Cross is the largest lilac farm in Southern California, selling fresh-cut bouquets directly to the public, with lilac varieties available 7 days a week. Activities include archery, tomahawk throwing, slingshot range, farm animal visits, reptile show, spring wagon rides, hoedowns and jug band shows, a treasure hunt, and more. For a small admission, you can also stroll through the lilac maze and enjoy walking trails, petting zoos, tire swings, a jug band, and old-time games on the farm. You can reserve space at fortcross.com/lilac-festival. The 37th Annual Vintage Alpine, a wine and food experience in the country, will be held May 5th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms in Flint Springs. Sponsored by the Kiwanis Club of Alpine, this event traditionally offers tastes from over 40 local wineries, as well as samples of foods from local restaurants and sips from local breweries. You can also enjoy live, relaxing music and a silent auction in a beautiful garden setting. For tickets, you can visit vintagealpine.org. Julian Tea and Cottage Arts is serving Mother's Day teas May 9th through 13th. These special teas include finger sandwiches and savories, scones, tea breads, and desserts. Teas will be served both indoors and out, weather permitting. Special menus are available with advance requests for vegetarian, gluten-free, and children's options available. There are several seating times each day between 11:30 and 2:30. You can reserve space at juliantea.com. La Mesa Sunrise Rotary Club invites you to their fundraiser bowling event on Friday, May 10th from 5:30 to 8:45 p.m. at Parkway Bowl in El Cajon. Options include individual entries, a team of four, or cosmic bowling with black lights, music, and glow sticks. All profits from entry fees and a raffle will benefit services and projects sponsored by the La Mesa Sunrise Rotary Foundation, including scholarships for high school seniors, the La Mesa Community Garden, Rotary's efforts to eradicate polio worldwide, and more. A registration link can be found in the events section at eastcountymagazine.org. The Ramona Chamber of Commerce invites you to savor a taste of Ramona on Saturday, May 18th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Your ticket includes tastes from 19 participants at 15 locations, including foods from local restaurants, caterers, and bakeries, as well as wine and hard cider. For all the delicious details, visit ramonachamber.com. The La Mesa Park and Rec Foundation and City of La Mesa bring together local artists, performers, art enthusiasts, and the community for an afternoon of inspiration and creativity during the annual Art in the Park event. This event aims to foster appreciation for the arts while providing a platform for local artists to showcase talent. It will be held Saturday, May 18th from 2 to 6 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Garden in MacArthur Park. Visitors can expect a diverse range of artistic expressions, live painting and sketch artist demonstrations, art vendors, performing artists, an art show displayed through the garden, and more. Art in the Park will also feature live musical performances, food trucks, drinks, opportunity drawings, and interactive activities for children. Early bird packages are available online, and you can find that link in the events section at eastcountymagazine.org. Tanya Tucker, who was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame last October, will perform live at the Magnolia in El Cajon May 19th. Since her first hit Delta Dawn in 1972, Tucker has rocketed to stardom with a streak of top 10 hits, albums, and multiple Country Music Association Award nominations. Her 2019 album, While I'm Livin', won the Grammy Award for Best Country Album. Bring My Flowers Now won a shared Grammy for Best Country Song. Her latest album is a 2023 critically acclaimed collaboration with Brandi Carlile called Sweet Western Sound. For tickets and information, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com. El Cajon's Concerts in the Park continue every Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon. May's performers include Twisted Gypsy, Soul Persuaders, Patrick Trampas, Detroit Underground, and the Morgan Lee Band. For a list of these outdoor concerts, visit DowntownElCajon.com. Lions, Tigers, and Bears, an exotic animal sanctuary in Alpine, invites you to Wild in the Country on May 19th. The sanctuary's biggest annual fundraiser features live and silent auctions, a luncheon, entertainment, and opportunities to view big cats and other rescued animals, all for a good cause. For tickets and details, visit lionstigersandbears.org. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
With grocery prices skyrocketing and everybody looking for a way to cut back on costs, a fun and surprisingly low-maintenance way to save money can be owning chickens. Now, don't mistake low maintenance for entirely no maintenance. Chickens aren't just egg machines. Some initial effort must be made. So here are some basic tips as well as things to avoid if you're bringing chickens into your own backyard, compiled by our reporter Patrick Watkins, who started raising hens himself 5 months ago when skyrocketing egg prices and avian flu reports egged him on to start a flock. He opted to buy chicks and raise them from scratch, but says the challenge with this approach is figuring out whether chicks are male or female, since most cities don't allow roosters. Experienced flock owners have methods such as wing shape, but most novices are left guessing until a larger comb develops on roosters at about 6 months, so you may want to consider fully grown hens. Richard Edwards, an Alpine resident who teaches courses on how to raise chickens and also sells chickens and fertilized eggs, warns that not having a predator-proof chicken coop is a common mistake new owners often make. Coyotes, skunks, raccoons, and opossums may enter backyards and gobble up your chickens if given the chance, and in rural areas, mountain lions and bobcats also prey on poultry. So it's best to batten down the hatches and have as secure of a coop as possible. These crafty critters aren't the only animals you have to keep out. With avian flu spreading like wildfire around the country, another overlooked risk to your flock is potential disease spread by migratory birds and even local birds. Avian flu has already killed at least 53 million chickens in recent years, and the numbers are still rising. If avian flu is diagnosed, entire flocks must be euthanized by law to prevent spread of the lethal disease, so it's best to keep all birds away from your chickens. Birds can also bring lice and mites through shared food or water sources. Luckily for backyard chicken owners, there's a simple countermeasure. A patch of dirt gives chickens the chance to take a dry bath, rubbing dirt in between feathers, which helps remove and prevent lice. Medications do exist, but these can make anything your chickens produce full of chemicals for up to 10 days, so it's best to keep it natural and stick to dry dirt. There are many different breeds of chickens, so it can be hard to decide on a good fit for your backyard. You have Easter eggers that resemble a hawk and lay all kinds of colorful eggs, earning their name, or even death layers that produce eggs well beyond the typical 3-year laying span that most hens have. Edwards says the best hen to have around your backyard is white leghorns. They are smaller than most chicken breeds, so they'll need less feed. They produce more as well as larger eggs, making them a clear winner. While both Watkins and Edwards think you can never have too many chickens, many cities don't agree, so be sure to check local laws in your city or in the county if you live in an unincorporated area to find out what's allowed where you live. Just like people, chickens are most productive when happy and healthy. An important part of this depends on the hen's diet. Simply feeding them scratch grains isn't enough. Chickens also need bugs, fruit, and vegetables to give them the required nutrition they need, along with calcium for stronger eggshells. With a little effort and a trip to your local feed store, you could soon be crossing eggs off your grocery list and enjoying the joys of backyard farming. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Firefighters supporting the Protect Santee ballot measure say there's not much we won't do to protect our family, friends, and neighbors in Santee. And so shirtless firefighters held a calendar launch party at Dino's Pub East in Santee on May 2nd. Besides food and beer, attendees could purchase a calendar and get an autograph from Santee's homegrown hotshots, all with their shirts off. As the last days of the Protect Santee signature gathering came to a close, Santee residents were asked to put their autographs on a petition of their own. The Santee Firefighters Association stated, "Many of you know we've been out volunteering to let Santee know our fire department is severely underfunded and that we need you to get behind the Protect Santee initiative to help save us. You get to be one of the heroes who have helped our team protect Santee by providing the much-needed financial support to run a campaign to let Santee voters understand how critical it is to support our initiative." Now, if you miss this fun event, you can still pick up a calendar at protectsantee.com. All proceeds support the Protect Santee Initiative, a small and temporary sales tax to fund a new fire station, renovate existing stations, and augment firefighting personnel in the city of Santee. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Tribal Beat report. The Humboldt Indian Village Land Transfer Act, authored by Congressman Darrell Issa, passed the House of Representatives on April 10th. H.R. 6447 incorporates 172 acres of land in San Diego's East County region into the Humboldt Indian Village Reservation, placing the land into tribal trust and preserving it for generations to come. This area also includes a 100-year-old church and cemetery where their tribal lineage has rested for generations. The acreage is currently owned by the Humboldt Indian Village and includes residential land for homes and council buildings and the tribe's only road for transportation. If approved by the Senate and signed by President Joe Biden, this would be a dramatic expansion of Humboldt's tribal lands, since the existing reservation has only 6 acres, most of which is occupied by the tribe's casino and a hotel under construction. Congressman Issa says the Humboldt Indian Village has endeavored for years to facilitate the best ways for tribal members to move onto reservation land in order to raise their families, preserve their native culture, and honor tribal customs and practices. He adds, "This Feed a Trust bill grants this historic tribe an opportunity to do just that. By placing Humboldt's land into trust, our legislation safeguards the reservation, its sacred sites, and Kumeyaay traditions, so they will endure far into the future."
This is Ed Barreno with East County Magazine on KNSJ with some grilling safety tips. Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, East County Magazine's in-house fire chief and columnist, says that firefighters respond to many structure and wild land fires that involve barbecues around this time of year. He adds, quote, "We also treat many victims for injuries related to barbecues. Barbecue safety means sending the right smoke signal, and that signal is safety," unquote. While gas grills contribute to a higher number of home fires than their charcoal counterparts, all grills pose a risk for fires and burns. Grills should be placed well away from the home and decks, far from under the eaves or overhanging branches and vegetation. Other grilling safety tips from the National Fire Protection Association are as follows. 1. Propane and charcoal grills should only be used outdoors. 2. Keep children and pets at least 3 feet away from the grilling area. 3. Keep your grill clean by removing grease or fat buildup from the grills and in trays below the grill. 4. Never leave your grill unattended. Always make sure your gas grill lid is open before igniting it. 5. If you smell gas while cooking, immediately get away from the grill and call the fire department. Do not move the grill. If the flame goes out, turn the grill and gas off and wait at least 15 minutes before relighting it. 6. When using a starter fluid, use only charcoal starter fluid. Never add any other flammable liquids to the fire. Keep charcoal fluid out of the reach of children and away from heat sources. When you are finished grilling, let the coals completely cool before disposing of them in a metal container. And finally, use common sense and grill safely.
Now
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, my very special guest is Juliana Gergis. She is the new executive director of the Chaldean Community Council. Juliana fled religious persecution in Iraq, coming to America when she was just 19 years old and pregnant at the time. Connecting through other Chaldeans here, she learned about the Diego Valley Charter School, where she learned English and obtained a high school diploma. She went on to earn both a bachelor's and master's degree in counseling at San Diego State University, and now she's giving back to help other newcomers to America at the Chaldean Council, where she has expanded the nonprofit to help refugee and immigrant families in El Cajon, including during the pandemic, when the organization provided a lot of help to people in need. She's also the winner of the San Diego Metro Magazine's 40 Under 40 Award and an elected member of the Cajon Valley Union School District Board. Juliana, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
What were conditions like in your homeland in Iraq that drove you and your husband to come to America when you were so young and 6 months pregnant at the time?
Condition in Iraq promoted us to come to America when I was 19 and pregnant. It was a difficult decision, but we couldn't stay there. It wasn't safe for us as a family.
Yeah, that's, I think, a very common experience for a lot of refugees coming in from around the world. So what was it like to arrive here in America as a newcomer who didn't speak English? And how did you survive and become so successful?
Arriving in America as a newcomer who didn't speak English was challenging. But the hard work and support from the community, we managed to thrive and succeed.
Good for you. And now I'd like to introduce one of our wonderful, talented interns, Danera Ramirez, who is from Grossmont College, where I know you worked for a long time. Danera has a couple of questions for you.
How did your time at Diego Valley School influence your life?
My time at Diego Valley School greatly influenced my life by providing me with a solid foundation and supportive environment.
How helpful was your time at Grossmont College in preparing you for higher education?
Grossmont College played a crucial role in preparing me for higher education, offering valuable resources and education opportunities.
So who does the Chaldean Community Council help?
We help everybody, not just Chaldean people. The doors are open for like all people, all communities, whoever needs help with anything.
Can you tell us about some of the programs and the assistance the organization provides?
Sure. We do everything for people, like anything they need help with, from looking for job applications, reading their mail, reading their email, applying for medical, for CalFresh, CalWorks, applying for college, any help with any job application, anything. We help people, especially non-English speakers, mm-hmm. who needs help all the time, and they come to our center looking for help.
That's great. That's so important for new refugees and immigrants coming here. So what prompted you to start the computer literacy program and a program to help people find health insurance, Juliana?
Some programs provided include computer literacy training and assistance with finding health insurance. We started those programs to address specific needs within the community and promote empowerment and well-being, especially during challenging time like COVID pandemic.
Yeah, tell us about that. What were some of the things you did during the COVID pandemic to help the community?
During COVID pandemic, we collaborated with SDSU, other organization, and health. We provided health information to people. We were trying to reach as many community members as possible to make sure people are getting the help during the pandemic.
That's great. So I want to introduce another of our wonderful interns from Grossmont College, Zaravan Ali. And Zaravan has some questions for you as well.
Hello. You're also an elected member of the Cajon Valley Union School District Board of Directors. What prompted you to run, and what's your experience been like serving as a trustee?
I run for Cajon Valley Union District. As a board of director, to contribute positively of education and present the interest of the community. Serving as a trustee has been a good experience for me and also helping my community.
All right. And what ideas do you have that you would like to see implemented?
I have several ideas for improvement in the Cajon Valley District, including enhancing technology in a classroom and expanding access to the community, being that person who can connect the community with the district.
All right, and what are your future goals and aspirations, both personally and for the Chaldean Community Council?
My future goals include further improving education in the district and advising the initiatives of the Chaldean Community Council.
Yeah, that's all very important. So, Juliana, how can people get involved with the Chaldean Community Council if they want to help out?
People can get involved with the Chaldean Community Council by volunteering their time, donating resources, or participate in the event and the programs.
Great. And folks, you can find more information at chaldeancouncil.org. Juliana, I'm going to let you have the last word today. What else would you like our audience to know?
I would like the audience to know that their support can make difference in lives of individuals and families within the Chaldean community.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Each May, the state of California and the county of San Diego join community partners in celebrating CalFresh Awareness Month. It's an opportunity to promote this resource to families and provide those who qualify with access to healthy, nutritious food. Dozens of community events are scheduled throughout the month of May to share information on CalFresh and offer free in-person help to eligible people and families. A full list of free events is available on the county's CalFresh website. Rick Juan, Director of County Self-Sufficiency Services, says our priority is to make sure everybody eligible signs up to receive this nutritious benefit. CalFresh is California's federal food assistance program, the state's version of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. It's designed to increase access to fresh and healthy foods. The program also aligns with the county's Live Well San Diego commitment to healthy, safe, and thriving communities. Over the past decade, CalFresh enrollment has increased by 68%, and as of April 1st, it was serving over 396,000 San Diegans. That's up 5.6% from last year. You can find out if you qualify for CalFresh anytime by calling 211 or applying online at getcalfresh.org or benefitscal.org. Again, those websites are getcalfresh.org or benefitscal.org, or just call 211. CalFresh benefits are distributed through electronic benefit transfer cards, and for a list of authorized retailers that accept these cards, you can visit fnsusda.gov. This has been Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego and the State of California.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.